This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You're listening to the longest running, weekly, episodic comic book podcast in all Place to Be Nation.
Broadcasting from the state-of-the-art L-shaped studios at beautiful and serene Hoho Loom Plaza in Vancouver, British Columbia. Greg Phillips and Nick Duke are the hard-traveling fanboys.
Coming to you live and in living color from Vancouver, British Columbia. In frigid Hoho Loon Plaza, and inside the L-shaped studios, we are the hard-traveling fanboys. I'm Greg Phillips. With me, as always, is Nick Duke, known in some circles as the Latin lover.
Oh, well, I'm not Latin, nor am I a very good lover, so I don't know that holds true. And I suppose our show is only in living color if that color happens to be white.
Now, Nick, if there's one thing Dr. Nash taught me, it's always take credit for everything.
That's a good point. That is a good point. And who are we to doubt the teachings of one Dr. Kevin Nash? Dr. Kevin Nash and Dr. Eugene Porter, I feel pretty easy, you know, comfortable in saying, are the two greatest doctors in the history of our time.
Absolutely, absolutely. And they both spent a little time together on Fire Island, I understand.
Yeah, yes. They have a summer home there. It's quite lovely.
Well, we are here to administer to you, the listening audience, a lethal injection of our own.
I don't know that it's a lethal injection. I hope that no one dies after listening to this podcast, but given how bad...
Isn't that a good run?
Given how bad what we're here to talk about is, it might be possible.
Yes. Because you are listening to Off the Page. Mm-hmm. This is our recurring series where we look at comic book-related media that are not comic books. These are things that could be video games, could be movies, games, or even what we're here to talk about today, a television show. And we, in our time, have reviewed some good things on this, some weird things on this, such as the Wonder Woman pilot from NBC, and some very, very bad things on this program, on these airwaves. Nick, what are some of the bad television-related projects or movie-related projects you can think of that we reviewed? Hulk and the Agents of Smash.
Yeah, Hulk and the Agents of Smash comes to mind first and foremost. If you want to dig all the way back to the column days of Off the Page, there was, of course, you know, one of our favorite things that we've ever done, which was Spider-Man Unlimited, which we've been threatening to return to just to do again because of how much fun we had writing it. And I feel like a podcast might be even more fun. But, you know, those are a couple. I'm sure there have been others, but I think those are the two that most instantly spring to mind, which is appropriate because those are both Marvel animated series, and here today we are here to shit all over another Marvel animated series.
That's right, because while DC and Warner Brothers have struggled on the big screen, they've had quite a bit of success on the small screen over the years. Particularly
in animation, where their pedigree at this point is unparalleled, at least in terms of the superhero game.
Yes, from the likes of Batman the Animated Series, Superman the Animated Series, Justice League, Young Justice, Teen Titans, you name it. Marvel, on the other hand, has a bit more of a checkered history, particularly in the last couple decades, going all the way back to projects such as Fantastic Four and Iron Man in the late 90s, into some of the rather, I guess what you would say, bizarre projects. Black Panther, the TV show that we talked about on these airwaves back in February.
There's one that we dumped all over.
Yes, and then there was, I'm trying to think here. Oh, the anime, the Iron Man anime that they tried. And there were a couple other animes that they tried.
X-Men anime and Iron Man anime as well.
And I think they did a Wolverine one too, did they not?
They may have done a Wolverine solo, but I know they did an X-Men one because I remember the god-awful, the costume designs, I remember the front cover had Cyclops with, like, the most stereotypical anime hair, you know, that's kind of, like, fluttering in the wind and stuff, and it just looked awful.
And then there, of course, whenever they did stumble upon a success in the last decade or two, such as Wolverine and the X-Men or Spectacular Spider-Man, those shows were very short-lived or short-lived and gave way to inferior replacements, and particularly in the case of Spider-Man, which gave way to Ultimate Spider-Man, another show that we did not have kind things to say about. But we say all this to set up probably the last great Marvel animated show, Nick, which was Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, was on a nice little run there. Had a couple, had I think three seasons of good stories there, maybe two of good stories. And then at I think it was at the end of season two, in fact, that
it was, yeah.
They were abruptly taken off the air and replaced with a – this is all aligning with comic book writer Jeff Loeb joining Marvel and heading up their animation division. And the decision was made in 2013 after the success of the Avengers movie in 2012 to create a brand new Avengers show that would align itself, in theory, more closely to the movie and be an easier entry point for kids to watch. So gone was Earth's Mightiest Heroes, which was a very good show. And in its place is a replacement called Avengers Assemble. And ostensibly, it could be considered a loose continuation of the events of Earth's Mightiest Heroes, just with an entirely new voice cast, a new animation style, and all new storylines. But other than that, a direct continuation.
Right. And you know, there are a few instances where the voice cast has some continuity. Nick Fury, for example, is voiced by Chi McBride, who also voiced him in a couple of episodes of Earth's Mightiest Heroes and who also voiced him in Ultimate Spider-Man. So this is, I think, trying to create something of an Marvel animated universe where Ultimate Spider-Man, which was running alongside this at the time, was supposed to technically be taking place in the same continuity to develop opportunities for crossover and things of that sort. I think Nick Fury was kind of one of the characters that was most often tagged for that crossover role.
Right. You included in this universe would be Ultimate Spider-Man and the later show Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Jeff Loeb was kind of the, along with Joe Quesada, actually, is one of the main shepherds of this show, Avengers Assemble, of its concept. And it would be written primarily and developed by an entity known as Man of Action, which is a conglomeration of American writers, consisting primarily of Duncan Rulo, Joe Casey, Joe Kelly, and Stephen T. Siegel. And they especially excel at children's series. They are mostly known for their work writing Ben 10, Generator Rex, some episodes of Earth's Mightiest Heroes, Ultimate Spider-Man, things of that nature. But they were kind of the primary drivers and writers of this series. Now, what's different about that from Earth's Mightiest Heroes is that Earth's Mightiest Heroes, a large portion of the episodes were written by a guy named Christopher Yost, who is also a comic book writer and who had a strong reputation working. He worked in the Thor movies as a consultant and a writer. He also has a long history of working in animation. I believe he wrote some episodes of Young Justice. So he's got a strong background in this. He's gone completely on Avengers Assemble, doesn't write a single episode. And so what we're going to do is we're going to review for you the two-part, or actually the first two episodes of Avengers Assemble, which is a two-part, I guess, opening salvo. Mm-hmm. Introducing what this series is going to be and what it's going to be about. So let's go back in time, shall we, Nick, to 2013. Where were you at with Earth's Mightiest Heroes, and what were your thoughts when? Because I remember this pretty well. What were your thoughts when this change was announced ahead of time?
Well, you know, with Earth's Mightiest Heroes, they had been putting the seasons on Netflix, and I had actually caught up and watched the entire series and loved it. I thought it was, you know, I draw this comparison a lot, and I never mean to imply that Earth's Mightiest Heroes was as good as Justice League Unlimited, but to me, it was Marvel's version of it in terms of a wide-reaching cast, especially by Season 2, that reached into all these far corners of the Marvel Universe while also meaning to maintain a focus on a tight narrative that was driven by a core cast of characters while, you know, like I said, simultaneously expanding the universe in ways that we never really thought we'd see in animation. It's as good a modern animation show as Marvel has ever done. And I say modern to basically say that the only thing I can think in terms of Marvel shows that even compares to Earth's Mightiest Heroes is X-Men. And clearly X-Men would be the greatest Marvel animated show of all time. But for my money, Earth's Mightiest Heroes is a clear-cut number two. So when news came that they were going to cancel Earth's Mightiest Heroes and replace it with a different show, and as news started to trickle out that it was going to be closely tied in to Ultimate Spider-Man, at least from a continuity standpoint, and that they were seeking to move it more in that direction, the only thing I could think of was, well, fuck.
Yes. I remember this reaction explicitly, and I was trying to maintain some level of optimism on account of I still respect Jeff Loeb, respected him as a comic book writer, and I thought, well, he's shepherding it. At least maybe it won't be so bad. They had made it clear also, Nick, that they were trying to aim it more towards kids, which, as we've learned and as we'll discuss here, to Hollywood and to studios means dumbing it down to a degree that children are idiots and everything has to be laid out for them 100%. Subtlety is gone. Nuance is gone. And distinct, interesting characterizations are gone.
Yep.
but we'll get to that. We'll get to that. The other key difference from Earth's Mightiest Heroes to Avengers Assemble is that Earth's Mightiest Heroes was not a giant steaming pile of shit. But again, we'll get to that. So let's get it started. Now, usually on Off the Page, you know that we like to watch along with the viewing audience. Well, unfortunately, Disney has not made it particularly easy to get a viewable copy of Avengers Assemble. It is no longer on Netflix, nor is Earth's Mightiest Heroes. It is not on Hulu, from what we could tell. It is not on any of these streaming sites that we could tell. So we had to find other means to watch it, and thus we cannot watch it right now. But rest assured, we're saving ourselves a great deal of misery. So if you would like to find a copy of this episode, it's called The Avengers Protocol, Episodes 1 and 2.
And actually, I believe both of those were released for free on YouTube by Marvel Entertainment. So those are actually out there legally for free on YouTube from a verified Marvel account. We're just not going to watch them again because I did it for Agents of Smash. I'm not doing it again. I am not going to force myself to sit through another god-awful Marvel Disney XD television series. I'm just not.
Yes. It watching it the other day, full disclosure, we watched it together at Nick's compound together. And along with our good friends Russell Sellers and David Sundy. And I'm not going to do it again either. It was a hellish experience. It created a void in my bowels shortly thereafter. I don't think it was a coincidence that all of us were taking turns using the facilities throughout that experience. So we're just going to get into it and explain to the best of our recollection why Avengers Assemble is such a mess, and hopefully get to the bottom of where it all went wrong. So this show starts us out in a with Tony Stark as our point of view character. Tony, who is, in my opinion, being voiced in an abysmal manner by somebody who I guess may be trying to do a loose Robert Downey Jr. impression, but a very bad one. I don't know. I actually thought the guy on Earth's Mightiest Heroes sounded a lot closer to RDJ than does this guy. But that's just me.
Adrian Pasdar is doing the voice.
I have no idea who Adrian Pasdar is.
Yes, you did. He was He was the non-Peter Petrelli from Heroes.
Oh, Nathan Petrelli.
Yes. He's done various various things. I'm trying to run them off the top of my head. Nathan Petrelli, he has had roles on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think he had something to do on Supergirl at one point. You know,
he was the not Maxwell Lord, but the replacement Maxwell Lord.
Yes. What's his name? Morgan Edge.
Yeah. Well, in any event, he's not a good Iron Man.
I would agree with that.
Very, very flat characterization here.
Wow, and hey, apparently, before this ever aired, he actually did Iron Man in that god-awful Marvel anime that we just referenced earlier, and had voiced Iron Man in Ultimate Spider-Man. So they were trying to, I guess, have him in keeping, and so allowed him to continue to be the voice there, carrying on into this.
And instead, what they should have done is imported the gentleman from Earth's Mightiest Heroes that voiced Iron Man, Eric Loomis, who I thought did a really good, passable RDJ impression, and it would have been good. It would have been fine. But he's our point of view character here, Nick, and we start things off with a plot that's designed to bring together our core list of heroes, which for this show, our main Avengers team will consist of Iron Man, mm-hmm. Captain America, mm-hmm. Black Widow, mm-hmm. Hawkeye, Thor, Hulk, and the Falcon.
The Falcon, yep.
And we see the introduction of these characters through the eyes of Iron Man, and with him as the 100% leader, by the way, complete with – and you know that he's the leader because Captain America says repeatedly, "You're the leader now, Tony. You have to lead us." And then Tony says, "I don't think I can lead you." And then Cap's like, no, you're the leader. You're a good leader, Tony. You're going to lead us in the right direction. I trust you to be a leader." And then Tony says, "I don't know. I don't feel like leading." And then Cap's like, no, trust me, bro. You're going to lead." And then Tony's all like, "You know, I think I am a leader. I'm going to lead us." And I just summed up two episodes, basically.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So, with all that being said, we'll see you after the break.
Yep. Have a good one, folks. But yeah, so our cast here, I'll just run through our main cast. We've got Laura Bailey as the Black Widow.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Troy Baker, a very accomplished voice actor who has voiced the Joker in Batman Arkham Origins, has been in plenty of anime adaptations over the years. Ultimate Spider-Man, he's been in video games.
And did many characters on Earth's Mightiest Heroes, the Better Avengers show. Apparently, he voiced Whirlwind. The Grey Gargoyle, Clay Quartermain, Blizzard, The Constrictor, Robbie Robertson, Ulick the Troll, Michael Korvac, Groot, Glenn Talbot, Eric O'Grady, and several others. So, man, they even got down to the tertiary Ant-Man and Eric O'Grady. So that's pretty impressive.
He's also voiced the Joker in one of the best DC animated movies, Batman Assault on Arkham. He's a talented voice actor. Unfortunately, he's wasted here as Hawkeye. Adrian Pasdar, as we mentioned, is Iron Man. Bumper.
Oh,
Robinson.
He is also the voice of Batman in Batman the Telltale series.
Oh yeah, that's right. He is, and he's great on there.
Yeah, he is. He's really good. So yeah. He's done a lot. I mean, Troy Baker is probably one of the more accomplished. I'm looking right now at just his video game credits. He is one of the lead voices for that the Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor series that they've been doing. He did some voice the lead character in The Last of Us. He did Nightwing and Sinestro in the Injustice games. I'm just looking, yeah, so tons of stuff in the last several years that is very notable in the video game community. Voices for the Mass Effect series, voices for Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom, you know, and the voice of both Tim Drake and Two-Face in Arkham City. So,
wow,
pretty much every major comic book-related video game release, it feels like, over the last almost 7 years, it seems like he's had something to do with. So, very prolific as a video game voice actor, and here getting a major animation role, which he's done plenty of those too, but you know, this is what I wanted to call out.
Provided his penis as an inspiration for the Ass Effect porno movie. So
yes.
You know, that was pretty bold on his part. So he's done a lot. Bumper Robinson, which is an amazing name, is your voice of the Falcon. He's also an accomplished actor and voice artist. Roger Craig Smith is Captain America, and I know him.
Man, I'm sorry to just keep throwing you off, but Laura Bailey is the voice of Catwoman on Batman the Telltale series.
And she's awesome in it.
Yes, she is. So, yeah, we have the principal male and female voice actors from a much better superhero-related property here on this really shitty superhero-related property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Roger Craig Smith has also done a he was Forge on Wolverine and the X-Men. He was Ocean Master on Young Justice. He's done a lot of extremely relevant and interesting work. A lot of video games here, Metal Gear Solid, Portable Ops, which I've never played, and Metal Gear Solid 4, Guns of the Patriots. Which I never played in X Story for a time.
Batman in Arkham Origins.
Ah, yes. There it is. Bruce Wayne, Batman. Also, Ruggiero Ferraro in Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, which I haven't played also. These are some accomplished voice actors. He's Captain America.
Crap. And he was Ezio in the Assassin's Creed 2 series of games.
Oh, wow.
So, one of the more, I would argue, you know, at least for the ones I played, easily the most iconic lead character of an Assassin's Creed game, Ezio. So, that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Wikipedia, by the way.
Oh, yes. We're just reading. What we're getting at is all these voice actors are accomplished. I'm not going to run through their filmographies anymore. But Fred Tatasciore is Hulk / Bruce Banner.
Fred Tatchator.
Whatever. Travis Willingham is Thor. And apparently at some point the Iron Man changes in season 4, but I don't really care about that. We didn't get that far, nor will we ever get that far.
No, we will not, sir.
So this is your primary voice cast, and the premise of this is when it starts out, Iron Man is bored. He wants something to do, and he's looking at his monitors of things going on all around the world, and Hulk's handling his business, and Thor's handling his business. And
Jarvis is sure to let Tony know that there appears to be a 99% chance of smashing whenever he's watching the Hulk video footage. We have all these stupid mathematical percentage calculations popping up, and I don't even know what exactly they're supposed to be, you know, calculating the percentage probability of, but it's ridiculous and stupid, and just the first example of many things where they feel like kids are idiots.
I believe it is Jarvis calculating the probability that the hero can resolve the situation on his or her own.
Mm.
And so we see Hulk has a 99%, and Thor has a 90%, and even Hawkeye has a 63% chance of resolving his situation. So Tony's bored, and then something comes across with Captain America being confronted by a suddenly resurrected Red Skull.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out the Red Skull is back from some fate we don't know after allegedly being dead. And he seemingly vaporizes Captain America in the opening scenes, and
that's sure to stick.
Yes, this is a tragic event that causes Tony to call in all the other Avengers in an emergency mission. And they all show up and they don't get along. Thor and Hulk fight and they trade horrible jokes with one another.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing we have to get to, Nick. Is this is some of the worst writing. I mean, literally none of the jokes are funny.
Dude, every time we do one of these Disney XD Marvel shows, that's what we talk about. Like, whether – I guess it started with Ultimate Spider-Man, where they decided to make the shows, you know, comedies, essentially. And yeah. I'm not saying a kid's show shouldn't have humor in it. It should absolutely have humor in it. It should heavily rely on humor. But they shouldn't be comedies. They should be superhero action shows, first and foremost. And the problem is, I think so much of the writing of these is spent on these humorous situations that aren't humorous. And these lines of dialogue that just aren't funny. And even if they were funny, they're delivered so badly by a series of what are supposed to be competent voice actors that they're just dead in the water, man.
It's brutal. It's brutal. Every character is written the same, essentially. Not in terms of how they behave. In terms of how they behave. Hulk and Thor are written probably the most distinctly, and even with that...
But this is a version of the Hulk that I... Oh, God.
Oh, it's horrendous.
It's essentially the Agents of Smash Hulk, and it's awful.
The Agents of Smash Hulk, yep. If you go back and listen to our Agents of Smash Hulk, take every argument and every complaint we had about the Hulk in that show and amp it up for this one, because this Hulk, not only is that Hulk, but this is a Hulk who is constantly dropping bad one-liners. Bad, awful one-liners at the expense of Thor and the other teammates. It's just – every character in this show is written to deliver one-liners. Every character is written to have the same exact sense of humor, the same lame, sarcastic, but not funny at all sense of humor. Picture if Chandler Bing wasn't funny. Like if Chandler Bing had Ross's personality or something, you know, like – just sarcasm, but just it's just sad in the end of the day, and it just brutal. Whether it's the Hulk, whether it's Thor, whether it's Hawkeye, who's nothing but a string of jokes that aren't funny. I mean, and I can't even think of an example, Nick. But they're jokes that are not even jokes. Gee, Hulk, you sure do seem to have a big butt lately. Like, there's no joke. It's just a statement, and they it's just awful. That's bad. They come together and they decide they're going
to
help.
I wanted to throw in one more when you talked about the only ones with distinct personalities. You said Thor and Hulk. I'll throw one more into the discussion. Hawkeye, but not in any kind of a good way when it comes to a distinctive personality, because Hawkeye's personality of the show is just to incessantly bitch about how incompetent he thinks the other Avengers are and how stupid he thinks the idea of putting the team back together is. And the first couple of times, like, oh, I get it. He's playing a snarky, you know, hard to get along with, you know, unlikable character. But then they beat you about the head and neck area with it over the course of the entire two episodes to the point where by the end of the second episode, you're ready for the Red Skull to just vaporize Hawkeye and kill him because he is easily the most annoying of these Avengers. And I've never had any sort of ill will or strong feelings either way, honestly, about Hawkeye being a part of the Avengers. But good God, this version of him is awful.
And it's saying a lot to say he's the most obnoxious member of the team, because that includes Hulk.
Yes.
So they go – and here's the shock of shock, folks. Within 10 minutes, but almost certainly within 5 minutes of Captain America being vaporized – the team has gotten together and flown to the Red Skull's secret headquarters where they find out that, shock of shocks, Captain America is still alive and the Red Skull has body swapped with him.
Let's not forget that Tony manages to convince the team to band back together by unveiling a golden statue of Captain America inside Avengers Mansion. And then there are other golden statues there implying that there are other deaths. But man, they look an awful lot like the exact same statue of Captain America that Tony has put up like 10 times.
It looks like Tony may have some sort of fascination with Cap.
Yes.
In that he appears to have built bronze and golden statues to Captain America that line Avengers Hall.
It does.
No one seems to bat an eye at this either.
No, I think they're all just used to it.
Yeah. So they find out that, yay, Cap is still alive, which takes away all the dramatic weight of the episode, by the way. But he's been body swapped with Red Skull, who is now in Captain America's body. But spoiler alert, Tony has a plan, and the Avengers are able to re-swap the bodies of Captain America and the Red Skull to get everything back to normal. But wait, the Red Skull and his friend, his helper, MODOK, that's right, MODOK, they show up and they trap Tony and they rip the arc reactor from his chest, and they install it in into the Red Skull, and the Red Skull becomes a brand new character known, Nick, I'm going to let you handle this one.
As the Iron Skull.
The Iron Skull. Now, if you had to take a guess as to what comic book writer likely would have come up with the concept of the Iron Skull, who would you think that would be?
The no good son of bitch dead dog Dan Slott.
And who else might it have been?
I don't know.
Jeff Loeb. The creator of such amazing characters as the Red Hulk.
The Red Hulk, yeah, that's true. Was he responsible for Red Onslaught as well?
I don't know, but probably. So yes, Dan Slott, Jeff Loeb, same thing, sadly. I hate this trope, Nick. I hate it in comics, and I hate it even worse in animation or on TV or in live action. Taking an existing character and just changing the color scheme and naming him the or taking another character and putting him in there, and suddenly he's the Red Goblin. He's Red Onslaught. He's the Blue Hulk. He's the Gray Hulk. He's the Yellow Hulk. Good God. You're beating it into the God into the ground. Nick, help me out on this. Is this just me? Am I the only one that thinks this is stupid?
No, it's definitely stupid. Red Onslaught, I just learned, by the way, is one of Rick Remender's. That was the merger of Professor Xavier's psionic powers with the Red Skull to create Red Onslaught during the events of Axis and something called, I shit you not, World War Hate in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, it's one of those things. So this is dumb, but Marvel's done it a lot over the years. Look at Weapon H, for example, right now, which is, still starring in its own solo series. So I don't know, man. It's dumb as hell, but you just kind of have to roll your eyes and try to move past it because they clearly are dedicated to this character mashup gimmick at this point.
Yes, and MODOK is there being all MODOK-y, who may be the best part of the series, in fairness.
Yeah, it's MODOK. You know, he's just doing standard, like, silly MODOK stuff.
Yes. The problem is MODOK ever not awesome? I mean, come on.
And the problem is there's nothing like nothing dramatic at all to bounce the silliness of MODOK off of. So it's just silliness on top of stupid television show, and it just kind of, I don't know, doesn't do much for you.
Yeah, so that happens all in the first episode, and so Tony is left dying, it seems, at the end of the first episode. But even though he has nothing to counteract his illness, he is quickly saved in the beginning of the second episode by his teammates, brought back to normal, or actually the end of the first episode, brought back to normal, given a new suit, and basically everything's back to the way it was. And so then we get the second part of the premiere episode in which MODOK and Iron Skull launch their attack at the Avengers, and they use nanobots to try to encourage the Avengers to destroy one another and tear them apart from the inside. But it doesn't work. They're able to overcome their differences thanks to some help from Tony, and they are able to overcome their violent spats with one another, which all starts, by the way, with a friendly battle between the Hulk and Thor as they fight in the Avengers Danger Room is all I know how to call it.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know what else you would call it. It's essentially that. But there's some sort of airborne anger virus or something going around the Avengers mansion. And so it's moving from person to person, making everybody angry and making them fight each other. And none of the fight scenes are particularly inventive or entertaining. And none of the humor interspersed in these fight scenes is funny. And at this point, we're just waiting for it to come to a merciful end.
Yes, the interesting thing here is this would have been a great chance to introduce your favorite monger and mine, Hate Monger.
Hate, yes.
That would have been a great chance, but no, it's still the Iron Skull behind everything. And you mentioned the action scenes, Nick, and I'm glad you did, because we've talked a lot about how bad the writing is on here. And make no mistake, the writing gets no better from episode one to episode two. There's still the corny jokes, the horrendous Hulk characterization, the horrendous Hawkeye characterization, the horrendous boring-ass voice work on every character on the show, including Cap, including Iron Man. And then on top of all that, maybe you could forgive all of this. It's a kid's show. Maybe you could forgive all of this if the action was good or the animation was good, but it's not. The animation is terrible. Simplistic and boring and uninteresting. The fight scenes are horrible. And throughout the entire show, and apparently through the series, they do this obnoxious Ang Lee thing where they split the screen up into like panels like a comic book, but you can't tell what the hell is going on because nothing interesting is going on in all of them, first of all. But second of all, it's just confusing as hell because that's not the way you view television. And so your eyes have to go to four different places at once. It's baffling. It's confusing. It ruins any kind of continuity that the fight scene could have otherwise. And overall, it's just pretentious and obnoxious, and I want it to die in a fire in a painful manner as if it were a sentient being.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea what they were going for. Again, I get the idea, kind of like
it's
the
fat.
Anime movie is for it to replicate the motion that is implied by a comic book, but you don't have to imply motion when you have literal motion. But, you know, it's not like the animation quality on this show is very good anyway, so maybe they felt like they needed to help the viewer out a little bit. I don't know. But whoever they decided to swap animation studios to in between Earth's Mightiest Heroes and this, it was a clear step down. But that's not, you know, no surprise there, considering every element of this show is a major step down from Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's there's just not much to like here. I mean, so Red Skull, Iron Skull, whatever the hell you want to call him, fails to destroy Avengers Mansion, and then he decides he needs to send out invitations to multiple villains to join his cabal of supervillains. And these people include Dr. Doom and others.
Dracula.
And Dracula. Oh, good Lord. So, okay, and we mentioned earlier the great voice cast, but we haven't talked about Black Widow, boring as hell, uninteresting, mm-hmm. Nothing to her. All of these characters, the only character that I would argue is somewhat interesting on here or somewhat right is Thor. I feel like Thor was at least written in a recognizable manner and attempts to affect a Chris Hemsworth accent. And, you know, it's Thor doing Thor things. Now, Thor still gets some horrendous lines, don't get me wrong, particularly in his fight with Hulk. He gets some extremely bad lines, but I think he's probably the least offensive to me. What about you, Nick?
Yeah, I could probably agree with that. You know, a lot of his negative elements bugged me more than they did you, but that's because I have a pretty critical eye when it comes to most Thor-related things. But you're right, in terms of general characterization, it's like a Thor for dummies, essentially, because that's what they're trying to treat the audience like. They're trying to treat their target audience of children like idiots, so they give them the most basic stereotypical Thor they can and remove any sort of depth or character development from him that he had, again, in Earth's Mightiest Heroes. So, yeah, I guess they're starting over with this Thor, and that's okay, I suppose.
Yeah, and you get a vaguely arrogant Tony Stark, but not an entertaining or witty Tony Stark. Because his one line, whereas you know, in the movies, Tony's one-liners are, you know, caustic and very incisive. Here, his one-liners are obvious and sound like something that a first grader would say on the playground is the best way to describe it. And I understand they're aiming it for kids, but as we've said on this show and written in our column for years, kids are not anywhere near as dumb as these people think they are, as these adults that are writing these shows think they are. You know, especially older kids, which is, I don't think this is aimed at, like, toddlers. I think this is aimed at, you know, 6 to 12-year-olds, maybe, you know? And they're not as dumb as you think they are. They understand things like character development. They understand, they understand whether they realize it or not. They understand what makes an interesting character, and that you can have more than just basic stuff. And in fact, I'd argue that kids don't like that. They don't like characters that are boring and one dimensional. And my source for that is that I was once a kid. And Nick, I understand that you were as well. Is that correct?
My understanding is that, yes, I was at one point a child, and I did not like things to be to patronize me. I didn't like things to be dumbed down for me, or like to feel like I was having things dumbed down for me. It's just a difference in children's television in general from, in today's age, from what we had. I really don't know what else to say about it. Unfortunately, it doesn't appear that it's going anywhere anytime soon.
That's right. When we were kids, we liked to watch things that had men in spandex with muscles larger than any human should be allowed to have pretend to fight each other. We liked that. That's what we want. And damn it, this show doesn't give that to us either.
No, it does not. No, it does not. And I don't even know what else we can say about this pile of shit at this point, Greg.
We've beaten us into the ground. All I can say is, folks, we don't have a lot of in-depth analysis on this, because all I can say is that it sucks. Like, it's not interesting. It's boring. I'm looking at the episode descriptors as I scroll down for season one. If you're in your third episode, you're doing the Space Phantoms. Then you do a Doctor Doom episode. Then you do Dracula and his vampire army converting Black Widow into a vampire. Ooh. Then the Super Adaptoid. The freaking Hyperion. Like, okay, Hyperion could be a cool episode if a show had built to it, or if you had more than 20 minutes to tell your story in, which they don't. And that's another thing that I noticed about this, Nick, that we didn't talk about, is everything moves so fast. There's no time for anything to breathe on here.
No, there isn't. I mean, they're definitely engaging in warp speed storytelling, so I don't know, man.
Anyway.
I guess my recommendation would be that if you're considering watching this show, don't. And instead, the next time you have to take a dump in a box and mail it to Disney XD and the producers of this show.
Yes, and if you do that, or do that in real life, do not tell them that the hard-traveling fanboys sent you, please.
Or do. I don't give a shit.
Nick getting old in his old age. As yes, this show sucks. Lowest recommendation. I will say I don't know that it's as bad as Hulk and the Agents of Smash, but
no, but that's that's like saying getting kicked in the dick isn't as bad as getting kicked in the knee. Like, that's
right, exactly. You know. They both suck. You don't want to get kicked anywhere,
right?
And it's bad. So, what are your thoughts on Avengers Assemble? I know a lot of these shitty cartoons have a lot of fans for some reason. So if you're one of them, feel free to reach out to us. But if you're not, if you're like us and you've watched the show, also feel free to reach out to us. You can contact us on Twitter. I'm at gphillips8652. He is at nickduke87. You can email us, gregp@placetobenation.com, nickd@placetobenation.com, or you can join the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page. We have a robust community, a vivacious community, a very
voluptuous community.
Voluptuous community, a busty community.
Oh my.
Of people there willing to talk all about comics and other assorted geekery, and we have had a lot of fun discussions on that particular corner of the interweb recently. And in the meantime, we're going to take a little commercial break, and when we come back, we've got our look at the news and notes in the comic book world. We've got our reading and watching segment, where we talk about what we've been looking at, and maybe a little hodgepodge here and there. Perhaps even a Danny hodgepodge. We don't know.
But
stick with us. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
We are back right here in the beautiful studios. Nick, how was your break?
It was fine. I sat here and listened to a little bit of opera, actually, during our break. So that was interesting.
That's great. I never took you for the opera. The opera type, Nick.
I never took you for the opera type either, but you know, sometimes you find things out about people that you – sometimes even when people have been together as long as we have, Greg, you can still throw surprises at one another.
Mm. That's true. Sometimes you find things that would surprise even the closest ones to you, such as brother love, things of that nature. There's all kinds of things.
Now, listen here. I think you know my stance on that, and I don't think it bears repeating on this podcast. But if you wanted to hear thoughts on such topics, there is, of course, Place to Be Nation Pop Comic Book Theater that's out there, both Chapters 1 and Chapter 2.
And I would highly recommend it. If you haven't listened to Comic Book Theater, you are missing out. It is a performance of a lifetime from several people. In fact, the likes of Aaron George, Andrew Garner, Russell Sellers, David Sunday, on down the line. But also, I would argue, in many ways, a tour de force of writing, of production, and indeed of participation by the likes of your humble hosts, the Hard Traveling Fanboys, and the manager, Todd Weber, who did a wonderful job on that. And I would highly recommend everyone check that out. Mm-hmm. And he does a great job every week. Because as you guys know, Todd Weber is the manager of champions. And that's proven by everyone else he manages except us.
That's true. That's true. Although no one else, Greg, no one else can lay claim to such a prestigious title as that of being the longest running
weekly episodic comic book podcast in all places to be nation.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad. And that's what we are, Nick. We really are that. And one of the things that we've been doing since the beginning of our run as the longest running weekly episodic comic book podcast in all places to be nation is a little segment where we talk about what we've been reading and what we've been watching in the prior week. It's a segment you may have heard of. It's a segment we like to call
Reading and Watching. What you been reading and watching?
What you been reading and watching?
Reading and watching. So, Nick, what you been reading?
The only stuff I've been reading is some Marvel comics from 1961 and 1962 and a little bit of 1963. And for
1960 what?
1961 and 1962. And a couple of books from 1963. And for my thoughts on those books, check out the brand new Marvel Age podcast featuring myself, Todd Weber, Tim Capel, and Russell Sellers, as we give you – the goal of the show is to give you a year-by-year breakdown of the publishing history of the Marvel Universe, starting all the way back with Fantastic Four number one in November of 1961. So I will withhold my thoughts on that and just say go listen to that show.
You know, when I first created Doctor Strange
– there we go. Now, we did have – I know you probably haven't got a chance to listen to the show yet, but we did have a standoff at one point where I was like, you know what? Probably best just go ahead and get this out of the way because we're all reading a lot of this stuff in Stan voice anyway. Let's get everybody's best Stan on the record. So, four Stan impressions offered up for the listeners of Place to Be Nation. Boop!
Perhaps.
Like that, didn't you?
Perhaps the, the themes song of the show should be Stand Back, of course, the famous Vince McMahon song. What do you think, Nick?
Well, we'd have to get somebody who is, you know, well well versed in impersonations to record such a version for, so maybe we'll work on that at some point.
We'll see, and perhaps even a version that would be recorded south of the Mason-Dixon line, but we'll have to talk about that at a later time, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now we are here to talk about reading and watching, and you haven't been reading anything but old Marvel. And as for me, I also haven't read anything. My intention, because both you and I, actually, we should probably tell this story. We went to Free Comic Book Day.
We did.
Comic Book Podcast. We should talk about this, for God's sake.
We did.
We went to Free Comic Book Day in your, well, not really your home, but fairly close, your old stomping grounds there. And good Lord, the Rip Taylor pictures are at the bottom of my screen that you sent me last week. Holy Lord. Anyway, we went there to your comic book shop in Columbus, Georgia,
mm-hmm.
and which is a far cry from Vancouver, British Columbia, by the way. That's a long trek, long haul. And picked up some free and otherwise comic books. Did we not, Nick?
We did. I picked up both Marvel offerings from Free Comic Book Day. I think those were viewing you know, little snippets of the Avengers story that has begun now with Jason Aaron, and I believe it's Ed McGuinness on art. And then also a little snippet of a new Amazing Spider-Man story from writer and artist Ryan Otley. So... good stuff all around there. I have not had a chance to read those books, however, but I'm looking forward to doing that as well. I also picked up, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, don't forget the Marvel offering, which I didn't pick up the Spider-Man one, but I did pick up the, Avengers one that also has a teaser for Ta-Nehisi Coates'
right.
Captain America run. And I have not had a chance to read, any of that yet.
Yeah, I have not either. And then I also picked up Green Lantern Earth 1 finally after intending to pick it up when it came out and just missing out on it for whatever reason. But now I own it, and I think you can look for a Long Book Hunters episode of the podcast focusing on it here in the coming weeks probably.
Yes, and as for me, I picked up the Marvel offering, as I mentioned. I also picked up, I believe, IDW, or was it Boom? I can't remember. One of them put out a James Bond. Dynamite put out a James Bond 007 free comic book by Warren Ellis of the Authority fame. Mm-hmm. And I managed to pick that up and
I'm reasonably sure that's a reprint that I've actually read, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, it is. This is a reprint of the opening of the Varger storyline that began all the way back in November of 2015. It was the first comic book with James Bond published by Dynamite once they got the 007 license. So I've read this. I think you'll dig it.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Haven't had a chance to read it yet, but it is all new to me. And then I also purchased Frank Miller's Sin City Volume 6, Booze, Broads, and Bullets. It was on sale for 50% off. I said, why the hell not? So that's the latest addition to my ever-growing collection of graphic novels and trades. And other than that, we got nothing else for reading, I don't think, Nick. So let's move on to watching.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's going to be hard to follow up last week, let's be honest. Last week was a rant for the ages about the season finale of The Walking Dead. If you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to last week's episode on John Burns' The Man of Steel, and you will hear that rant on the back half of the episode. This week, no Walking Dead, just CWDC shows. And I am I'm three episodes now behind on Supergirl, or two episodes behind on Supergirl. So we're not going to talk about Supergirl this week, but we are going to talk about The Flash, which mm-hmm. was on Tuesday night and gave us the latest in the continuing saga of the DeVos, Clifford DeVoe and his wife, whose name is?
Marlise.
Marlise, yes, thank you, Nick.
You're welcome.
And their story. In addition, we got some resolution finally to Cisco's continuing romance with Gypsy. And if you recall, a couple episodes there was a dangling participle. Just kidding, a dangling thread of Breacher, who is Gypsy's dad, who's retiring from his job as an intergalactic bounty hunter, who is interdimensional bounty hunter even, and he had offered Cisco to take his place as this bounty hunter. Well, in this episode, we see, unfortunately, Cisco's love story come to an end as he and Gypsy must part ways by the end of the episode. We also get Harry Wells continuing to work through his issues, and I thought, crucially, it gives an important role going forward to Cecile. Now Cecile has a relevant role in the show. She can actually help Harry formulate his ideas that could help the team potentially beat DeVoe. And, of course, I thought the best part of this episode, Nick, was the exploration of the romance between the DeVos and how they met when they were both younger, particularly Clifford was younger, and how he kind of he fell for her and she fell for him, and how his kind of radical ideas were able to influence her a little bit, and then the ultimate revelation that she realizes that Clifford's no longer there, that he's become exactly what he hated, that his power and his technology had corrupted him and turned him into what he hated most of all. And at the end, she actually leaves him, and she gets away from the Thinker. So very interesting developments here, and apologies for that spoiler. I did not mean to drop that. But nonetheless, it happened a week ago. Go watch it. It's a good episode. I thought it was a good episode. Nick, what did you think?
Yeah, I enjoyed it very much. I think it's important to to have these flashback sequences because they help to humanize at least Marlies DeVoe. I mean, Clifford at this point is kind of past the point of humanity, which I think is kind of the point of his character's evolution over the season, is to illustrate that his increased intelligence and his dedication to his ideals have really separated him from the rest of humanity and have kind of left him, you know, emotionless, and she is still the one person feeling genuine remorse and genuine conflict within herself over the actions they are taking. So, big fan of this episode, big fan of the flashbacks, and, you know, the Gypsy Sisko stuff, not as much for me. Thought it was kind of a forced breakup, honestly, but, you know, with the other aspects of the show working so well for me, it's hard to complain too much.
Yes, I would agree with that as well. I thought it kind of came out of nowhere. There hadn't really been too much. I mean, there have been a few mentions here and there of them having issues, but that being said, the acting was good, and I thought they pulled it off. So a very good episode. Enjoyed it quite a bit. Now, before we start talking about Arrow on Thursday night, would you like to retract any of your sniffing from last week?
No, of course not. Why would I do that?
You're maintaining your sniffing.
I am maintaining my sniffing. I am maintaining my sniffing in a Jason Todd appearing in Hush type of way.
Yes. Stealing my idea, Nick. Stealing my observation.
Not sure. I'm not stealing your observation. It was a fairly obvious one for anyone who's read Hush to make.
This episode of Arrow takes place inside a courtroom, almost entirely inside a courtroom, in fact. Because this is all about the trial of Oliver Queen. Now, you may remember earlier this season on The Flash, we had the trial of Barry Allen. So a little bit of deja vu here. But this is the trial in relation to the claim that Oliver Queen is the Green Arrow. And he's being prosecuted by a hotshot prosecutor. He's got Jean Laurie as his defense attorney. And the unfortunate part for Ollie is that Diaz appears to have everyone in his pocket. The judge is in his pocket. The jury's in his pocket. The cops are in his pocket. Everyone is seeming – every odd that you could possibly stack against Oliver Queen is stacked against him. We're talking John Cena in 2007 level odds stacked against him. And in this case – Oliver is kind of helpless on his own. He can't do it alone. He has almost resigned himself to his fate. But his friends come through in the form of a rather, and I don't want to spoil it for those who haven't seen it, a rather interesting fake out involving his old friend Tommy Merlin.
Mm-hmm.
It creates a great deal of drama in the episode, some great acting again. From Stephen Amell, who you've mentioned, Nick, has just been putting on some great performances of late. And it's true. It continued in this episode. We see that continue. We also see, crucially, a development in the Black Siren storyline as Laurel finally finds it in her to stand up to Diaz. Now, where that ultimately gets her, I will let the viewer decide when they watch. But needless to say, Diaz isn't going to roll over and play dead for anyone. So I also thought this episode answered some lingering issues I'd had about why Diaz would be so confident around a metahuman like Black Siren when you'd think she could just turn around and blow his brains out with her sonic scream. But this episode goes a long way to answer that. Also continues the string of great performances, some really great action scenes here, and a pretty clever usage of a character we've seen pop up once before on the series. I love this one, Nick. I thought it was yet another in a string of great Arrow episodes.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Practically no action, which is a little unusual for an episode of Arrow, and especially unusual for an episode of Arrow that you and I are unanimous in our praise of, but that's the case here. What it lacked in action, it made up for in character development, in surprising moments, and in what feels like something of a finally, mercifully, an end to the new Team Arrow versus old Team Arrow conflict, because it finally feels like the writers have decided to quietly drop that and just move on, because they know that nobody was buying it. So all around, I thought one of the – just another great episode in a run of great episodes for Arrow. They definitely stubbed their toe a lot during the first half of the season and even coming out of the gate after the midseason break. But coming down the closing stretch, they finally found their stride again and are reminding us just how high the quality of this show had returned to after season 5. So I think this bodes well for season 7. It feels like they're identifying the elements that are working and are refocusing on those elements. So let's hope that's a lesson they can maintain over the course of the entirety of season 7 next year.
Absolutely, Nick. I agree completely. And what's there from an action standpoint is good, from whether it be the opening scene with Diggle, or whether it be the rescue of a certain character that I don't want to give away right now. But the other thing that is kind of interesting to keep an eye on, you mentioned that the team dynamic, that storyline has kind of quietly been dropped, and I thought that was especially valuable from the standpoint of a character like Renee, who has been so annoying for so much of the season, and actually in this episode was not annoying, and actually had a pretty good scene with Oliver towards the end. So I'm interested to see if they can somewhat rehabilitate some of these supporting characters just a little bit before hopefully they go away. But what was really interesting is, we alluded to it earlier, for people that have read the Batman story Hush, you may get what Nick and I are referring to with regards to the fake out in this episode. Perhaps, Nick, perhaps this is foreshadowing something that could be coming next season.
Yeah, I don't, we'll have to wait and see how it plays out. I don't really have any thoughts on that.
Yeah. You also don't have any thoughts about anyone that might have suggested this several seasons ago?
No, none. None whatsoever, though. I don't know what you're driving at, but no.
I heard a few rumors that might be fair.
Decent. Not too shabby. Have a hell of a mind for this business.
That's right.
Yeah, well,
Cowboy-like.
Cowboy. Taught me everything.
Including how to hurt puppies.
Good Lord. No, that was my father, J.D. Ross. First name, J., middle name, D. you gotta get on that. You gotta get on that Slobberknocker audiobook.
Whew. Sounds intense. Oh boy! I'm a real boy. Oh,
what the hell?
I don't know. What the hell's wrong with me? I don't know. Anyway, where are we? Oh, yes, Arrow. So speaking of Arrow, what better way to bridge into our rundown, which is our weekly look at the news and notes in the comic book world. That's right. We call it
Welcome to the Rundown.
And indeed, we are bridging right from our reading and watching into our rundown with news of a shocking, not really shocking, I guess, but a sad departure from Arrow. Because the word has gotten out that Paul Blackthorne, not Paul Whitethorne, but Paul Blackthorne, who has been on the series since the very beginning, playing Quentin Lance, now the mayor of Star City, is exiting Arrow as a series regular following the conclusion of this season, which is actually coming up next week. Right?
Is it really?
Yes, it is. May 17th.
I thought they had another week in there.
Well, there's two more episodes left to go, one this week and one next week.
Wow. All right. Okay.
Blackthorne was one of only three actors who have been on the show continuously since its 2012 debut. Willa Holland already announced she's leaving. Now, Blackthorn apparently also has a new series that he's going to be starring in. So the odds of him being able to make guest appearances next year are, you know, maybe we might get him in an episode. I hope they don't kill him off. But got to say, Nick, I'm pretty worried about the fate of Detective Lance. I think this might be it for him.
Official prediction, as much as I don't want it to happen. Season finale, Diaz kills Lance, and then it causes evil Laurel to freak out, and she's going to ultimately be the one who physically defeats Diaz, not Oliver. And they're going to try and sell it as her big redemptive moment, and I for one, am not going to buy it.
Fuck you, Charlene. Fuck you.
Exactly. Pretty much that. But no, I mean, it sucks to hear that he's leaving. I mean,
he's great, yeah.
Arguably the emotional heart of the show at times over the last few years, once they really got away from the early dynamic of having he and Oliver have a very antagonistic relationship and brought him into the fold. He's kind of been the guy that you've felt the most sorry for over the course of the last few seasons. So it's going to be a very missed part of the cast as far as I'm concerned.
And also, hopefully, this will have Sarah Lance make a few more appearances on the show as well.
Right, but don't take her away from Legends. We're not suggesting
that. No. She needs to be on Legends. But anyway, bummer there. But we've certainly enjoyed his run on the show. He's been a big part of what, from the beginning, was pretty much our favorite of the CW shows. So good luck to you, Paul Blackthorne. Hope you have a lot of success moving forward, because I'm sure Paul Blackthorne regularly listens to our juvenile show. We also, sticking in the world of television, got our first trailer, Nick, from the second season of Luke Cage. Let me try that again. Luke Cage. It dropped, and it was good, and it introduces the new dynamic of the show, indeed, Nick, which appeared to be that Luke Cage is a little more brazen than he's been in the past. He's out there. He's public. Everybody knows who he is. They're turning to him for help, and everything seems to be going smoothly in the trailer as Luke's trying to bring the community together. That is until he is confronted by his latest enemy, who appears to be the big bad of this season. He's confronted by an enemy who is just as invulnerable as he is, coupled with super strength and great fighting ability. Ladies and gentlemen, he is confronted by none other than the man who is going to bush up the world, none other than the Bushmaster. Now, Nick, in your experience, how many years does it take to become a Bushmaster?
I don't know the first fucking thing about a Bushmaster, and I am certainly not anybody you should be asking about being the Bushmaster. I don't have the slightest fucking clue. I am the furthest thing from a Bushmaster you could possibly encounter.
I don't know, Nick. I've heard those rustling noises in the past. I would suggest that sometimes you rummage through bushes of your own.
Yeah, but rummaging the bush and mastering the bush are two totally different things. If I had mastery over my bush, you wouldn't hear me rummaging, because it would be at a more, you know, manageable length.
What do you think? Oh, God.
Go ahead. Never mind. Go ahead. We're here now. Might as well explore the space now that we've gotten here.
I'm going to apologize in advance for this.
Oh, God.
What do you think, Tony?
Okay.
What do you think Gary Spivey's bush looks like?
It looks like somebody bought a styrofoam ball from Walmart and spray painted it silver and super glued it directly above his dick. Is probably what I would go with.
Oh, God. The Bushmaster, Gary Spivey.
Now I'll tell you somebody who was a Bushmaster.
Who's that?
Klondike Bill.
Klondike Bill.
He knew his way around a bush better than just about anybody you'll ever encounter.
The bigger the bush, the more he was up for the challenge.
The bigger the bush, the more matted it was in places, the various aromas it might give off, the more Klondike Bill wanted to dig right in and master that bush.
What I'm getting from this, Nick, is that Klondike Bill would have been the ultimate Luke Cage villain.
What I'm getting from this is Klondike Bill like bushes so massive they could tickle your upper sinus area.
That's our Klondike Bill for you, folks.
It is.
If you knew Bill, you know that we're telling the truth. But nonetheless, Luke Cage's season 2 trailer dropped, along with the Bushmaster. There were other things, but mainly there was the Bushmaster. Your thoughts, Nick?
Yeah, it looked like a good trailer. Looked like it was in keeping with the tone of the show that we've come to expect. Although, like you said, the character of Luke is stepping up his methods, being a little bit more aggressive, it seems, in the wake of the events of season 1 and the events of the Defenders. Fuck the Misty Knight. Don't care anything about watching her with her no arm having ass, but at least we got Claire there hanging around, even though at some point Claire's going to have to just go on and know the role, and she's going to have to shut the mouth.
There you go again with your biases, your unfair comments about Misty Knight, your jumping into the love life of Claire Temple.
Had to pause there to think of the last name, didn't you?
Think of the last name. Well, I wanted to call her Claire Templeton for some reason, and I don't have any idea why that is.
Templeton was the gluttonous rat from Charlotte's Web, if you remember.
Yes, Templeton. There was also never mind. That was Tempest Fugit was the Clock King on Batman the Animated Series.
Yes, Tempest Fugit. Yep.
Not to be confused with William Totten. the comic book. Anyway, we could talk for days about great comic book names like Bushmaster.
Well, what did you think of the Luke Cage trailer? You didn't give us your thoughts.
No, I liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought it was good. There are some things that concern me. Primarily, the fact that I'm reasonably sure that they're going to follow the new Marvel Netflix method of having two different main villains. One that does the first half of the season will be the Bushmaster, I'm sure.
Yes.
And then still have Shades and that politician woman from Mariah. The first season as the other villains.
And see, I'll be okay with that. But what I'll not be okay with is if they pay off the tease from the end of season 1 and have fucking Diamondback return. I do not want that at all.
No one wants Diamondback. No one wants Diamond Front. No one wants anything to do with diamonds on this show.
Diamond are for never is the way what we always say.
Yes. The thing about this that worries me, Nick, is I got to be honest. I was pretty bored of the Mariah stuff by episode 8 of Luke Cage season 1.
I can agree with that, but I look at Diamondback as being so devoid of any kind of personality or charisma that I'll take just about anything over that.
Oh, absolutely. What I would rather happen is they just do the Daredevil season 1 approach and just have Bushmaster be the villain the whole season.
And we say that not knowing anything about how Bushmaster is going to be handled. So
Bushmaster could be horrible. I don't know. But he looked all right in the trailer. And I like the idea of Luke having a physical threat, because in season 1, most of the threat to Luke was not physical in nature, which is understandable. Now it's kind of him going up against someone that he's not going to be able to just bulldoze his way through.
Well, then again, they did that with Diamondback as well, where he
that's
was
true, yeah,
spent half
the, the bullets.
Have you finished the season finally?
No, I haven't.
Never mind.
But I don't really care if you spoil it, but I'm not invested.
Well,
with Puts,
they spent half the back season him limping around being injured. So, like, it's one of those things where I understand you have to find a way to have a physical threat to him, but at the same time, at a certain point, it's like he's unbreakable except for every major villain that ever comes around can break him. So it's like, what even is the point of the gimmick? You know, at some point, they got to find a legitimate intellectual threat or something like that for him, as opposed to continuously writing
Lex Luthor for him.
Yes, as opposed to continuously writing in exceptions to his invulnerability rule.
Right. Well, they had the magic bullets last year, but I think having a physical, like a guy that could fight him hand to hand, is kind of cool.
Right.
And maybe will require him to call in help from some of his friends, like not Danny Rand.
Sadly, I think Danny Rand is the only confirmed crossover character other than Claire at this point.
Maybe he'll be better on here, Nick. I don't know. I haven't watched Defenders, but
you haven't watched Iron Fist, so you don't even know anything about Danny Rand.
I know enough. I've read enough, and I've seen enough clips to know that it ain't going to be what I wanted it to be. But maybe, Nick, they'll cross it over with the Avengers Infinity War.
Mm.
React to Infinity War. And maybe one of two things will happen. Maybe, number one, Danny Rand could fade away and classify himself as obsolete. What do you think about that?
Well, considering how it has to be half the population if we're going by the Infinity War rule, let's say that every character involved with Iron Fist at all fades away and classifies himself as obsolete, with the exception of Colleen Wing. And in her stead, Misty Knight fades away and classifies herself as obsolete.
It would be a word. I like Misty Knight, but that would be a worthy trade-off to me. I'd take that. But here's the thing. And then Colleen Wang becomes the new, as Andrew Lincoln would call her, becomes the new, what do you call it, Iron Fist.
Iron Fist
is now the immortal Iron Fist.
Or Arn Fist.
Or Arn Fist, if you will, or even if you won't. But that's number one. Or number two, Marvel Netflix's developers have the scripts for three of their episodes fade away and classify themselves as obsolete thanks to the act of Thanos. And then we get shorter seasons and thus more of a – that's the other thing that worries me about this trailer is I remain worried that the pace isn't going to pick up any more than it did last season, and it needs to. We need to have a little bit of a clip here.
That is something –
it doesn't need to be fast.
Right.
Understand. Like, I'm fine with some slow, but it needs to move forward at a decent pace.
Move the plot forward, yeah.
Yes.
You know, it's weird. When did that really become an issue? Because I feel like Daredevil season one was fine at 13 episodes. There was nothing that felt artificial about extending that.
Right.
I'd say the same thing about Jessica Jones season one.
Jessica Jones season one, yeah.
I think we will disagree, and I will say that I didn't mind the 13 episode length for Daredevil season two. I thought it was fine, but I didn't think it was as egregious a stretch job as they did for Iron Fist or Luke Cage.
Yeah, I first noticed it with Daredevil season two, and I think I voiced that here on the show, that I worried about the precedent that it could set moving forward with the Netflix shows because of some of the pacing issues I thought they had, the forced double villains thing, and not even double villains, but two completely different stories that they told over the course of that season, the second of which to me was a bit of a failure. Comparatively. And then I haven't watched Iron Fist, but I have watched a lot of Luke Cage, and it definitely – I feel the length of Luke – wait a minute. I'm just going to say it. I'm going to own it. I feel the length of Luke Cage.
Good for you.
And it's impressive. But it I do feel –
but you wish it wasn't quite so long. I mean, that's what you're driving at.
Right. It would be a lot more comfortable if it were a little bit shorter is what I'm getting at.
Yep.
I felt that. And then I've heard the same complaints lodged about Iron Fist to a greater degree even, and then also about even Defenders, which is not that long of a season, but still had most people saying that it felt stretched. And I haven't watched Jessica Jones 2 yet, and I haven't watched Punisher, but I hope that those are different. And
Punisher was a great usage of the 13-episode format, in my opinion.
Good. Good. Glad to hear it. And hopefully Luke season two will be more along those lines. Because what I don't want is that kind of bogged down is the way that I describe it, Nick, where sometimes these series are getting bogged down in minutia that doesn't really matter.
Agreed.
So anyway, let's move from there to a huge news story, probably the biggest news story on the rundown this week, but one that I don't think you or I can make heads or tails out of, Nick, on account of we're not financial experts.
No, we are not.
But that doesn't mean we can't bullshit our way through an ignorant conversation. And all of you won't be any the wiser, unless you are a financial expert, in which case disregard everything I just said and I'm about to say. Comcast. there's just a new player emerges. Comcast is preparing a last-ditch cash offer, all cash offer, no debt, anything like that, just all cash offer for 21st Century Fox to interrupt and intercept the Disney deal to purchase 20th Century and or 21st Century Fox's media. Mm-hmm. Right now, Comcast is offering $60 billion all cash, as opposed to a $52 billion all stock deal already in place with Walt Disney Company. Reuters cites three unspecified sources familiar with the matter. The old reporters read anonymous sources that Comcast CEO Brian Roberts, not to be confused with longtime baseball star Bip Roberts, sees an opening if U.S. federal courts approve AT&T's $85 billion acquisition of Time Warner to go for – fuck the Time Warner, by the way – to go forward. A ruling will be on that – found on that matter in June. Now, Comcast was rejected back in December when they offered an all-stock offer due to regulatory hurdles. The difference here is they're offering all cash as opposed to all stock. Now, what does that mean exactly, offering all cash versus all stock, and why would that be any different from what they did in December? I have no freaking clue. Nick?
No, I don't know anything about that part of it, but I've read a couple of things about this, and apparently it isn't necessarily – that much different, you know, the cash versus the stock option. The concern with Comcast buying, and part of the reason that, from what I understand anyway, again, we are far from experts, part of the reason that Fox didn't enter into continued deep negotiations with Comcast past that initial offer was the fact that there is a growing pessimism about the odds of the AT&T Time Warner merger going through, because Comcast is a major telecom provider who would be attempting to produce a content manufacturer themselves. There are concerns that it would, on the grounds that the same grounds that AT&T Time Warner's merger would be disallowed, that this would also be disallowed. And so, what I've read, it is perceived by the Fox investors to be a safer deal to proceed with the Disney deal than it is to go forward with a Comcast deal. So a couple of different things there. One, Comcast might not even be allowed to make this offer. And two, even if they are, Fox may go with the Disney deal anyway. And three, Disney would, of course, also have the option to match or exceed any Comcast offer as well. So, but that all that being said, as we reported way back when the Disney Fox thing first broke as being a done deal, it was anything but. There are a lot of hurdles whenever you have a merger of this size. So we are still, you know, at least a couple of years away from seeing any effects on us as fans, I would say.
That's right, as we reported exclusively right here on the Hard Traveling Fanboys.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not using us for your primary comic book news source, what the hell's wrong with you?
What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, we're here every single week, except in the case of Giant Sizes, to give you everything you need to know that's happening in the world of comics. If we don't report on it, quite frankly, it's not a story.
Or it might as well not have even happened.
Exactly. We are from the news world, people. We have history. We're not in it anymore, granted. But we're from the news world. And once you're in the business, once you're a journo, as Snapper Carr accurately calls us, you can't get it out of your blood, right, Nick? We have an idea. We know what news is. We know about the acronym Tip Cup. And that's what lets you know.
Timeliness, impact.
Timeliness, impact.
Prominence.
Prominence.
Yeah, proximity. Yeah,
conflict.
Conflict and
unusualness.
Unusualness. There it is.
Yep. And then the last one, of course, is whatever the first P was, we said.
Proxim or prominence?
Prominence, one or the other. Take your pick. That's how you determine newsworthiness. And so we look at all the news stories and comics, and we determine what you need to know. Nothing else matters.
And nothing else matters.
That's right. Well, that's the end of the rundown. We got nothing else. Nothing else happened in the world of comics this week. And
or if it did, we just didn't feel like talking about it.
Yep, or care, for that matter.
There you go.
So with that being said, we hope that you had a great journey with us this week. We hope that you enjoyed Free Comic Book Day, a day in which comics are given away for free. And I hope to see Free Comic Day continue to grow. I don't know how to make comparisons because I wasn't at your – I don't know if I was at your Free Comic Day last year, Nick. I can't remember. But
according to my Facebook memories, you were.
Okay, well, the crowd is substantial this year, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a good thing, right?
Yeah, good thing. Absolutely a good thing. Good to see more people in the shop. I don't know how many of those were actually making purchases or how many of those were just walking in and getting free books or what the deal was. But judging by the line I stood in to make my purchases, it felt like he was doing a good amount of business. So always good to see the local comic shops doing well.
Yes, and I know one of your favorite parts is meeting some of the other local customers.
Yeah, I had a fantastic day. I had a fantastic time getting to meet, interact with people who have similar interests to us, and getting to promote our podcast in person. You know, you talk about, you know, the social media shilling, but I'm out here interfacing with the people, actually, you know, putting boots on the ground out here one at a time, as opposed to mass communicating.
That's right. That's true. And I know that in particular, you know, when you're standing in line, you managed to forge kind of an unexpected bond with one of the other customers that was there at the shop. And I want to congratulate you on that. I thought that was very interesting and unique. And
he said he was going to give our show a listen. So here's hoping that my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle shirt friend, wearing friend, is checking us out here and enjoying what he's hearing.
And we are big fans of any of our fans, and we're just happy and thankful for the support. And also, we got to let our audience know this. We are going to get into the business card making business here pretty soon. We're going to have official hard traveling fanboy business cards, right, Nick?
Allegedly.
And if you can help us with that, please contact us after you listen to this show and let us know in what ways you can help us get business cards at a preferably free rate. That would be phenomenal.
Yeah.
If you're in the making business cards for free business. So with that being said, hey, look, there's a minute on the clock.
Oh.
Near a minute on the clock. That means it's time. The Wrestling Minute. Oh my gosh, big week this week in the world of wrestling. We had a pay-per-view from World Wrestling Entertainment Sunday night, Backlash.
I don't want to talk about any of that because quite frankly, it wasn't that great of a show and none of that matters. Instead, let's talk about the shaping up of the June 6th or June 9th New Japan Pro Wrestling Dominion card, which yes. Greg Phillips and I are actually discussing making our first ever live viewing New Japan experience. That's right. We're considering staying up until like 3:30 or 4 in the morning to watch a Japanese wrestling show.
Yes. I mean, goodness gracious. You got Chris Jericho and Tetsuya Naito, mm-hmm. which if you haven't watched the video of Jericho's attack on Naito and his subsequent trash talk afterwards, seek it out on the internet. Also, of course, in the main event, Kenny Omega, Kazuchika Okada, number 4. Two out of 3 falls. No disqualification. No time limit. Not no disqualification. No time limit.
That's right. And then, of course, just recently, Rey Mysterio confirmed to be competing at Dominion as well, presumably against one of either Kushida, Will Ospreay, or Marty Scurll. So a big, massive New Japan card set for Dominion in Osaka in June, and we cannot wait personally.
Absolutely. And that's been the Wrestling Minute in 20 Seconds. So we appreciate your time, folks, and we love to get to more, but I can't help but notice that we are desperately out of time, and they're giving us the go-home cue. So, Nick, what do we have coming the folks' way in the next few weeks?
Next few weeks, we've got next week will be an episode of Countdown where we're going to count down our top 5 writers, active writers going today in comics. I think you and I both agree on the caveat that we're going to remove Jeff Johns from the discussion just to get more names on the list and stuff. But we're going to count down the top 5, our top 5 favorite writers who are still contributing right now.
Which for me will mainly be the top 5 writers as of about 8 months ago.
That's a fair point, but we're just going to move forward nonetheless. Then, in honor of the massive financial success that has been Avengers Infinity War, we're going to bring to you a long book hunt concerning the story on which Infinity War is based. That, of course, being 1991's The Infinity Gauntlet. And then to wrap up the month of May, it will be the most prestigious night in all of Place to Be Nation. Poop! That, of course, being the 2018 Haffy Awards. Instead of the Hall of Fame music, can we use Linda McMahon's theme song? Yeah. Wow. That's what I'm talking about.
Also known as the sexiest music in WWE history.
And hey, if
Rick Roots.
If a minute and 20 seconds wasn't enough of you listening to me talk about wrestling, you can listen to me talk about wrestling for an hour and 20 minutes as I recently had an appearance on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with JT Rosero and Scott Crisolo, where we broke down the main event from February of 1988. The Andre Hulk Hogan rematch for the WWF title, still the most viewed wrestling event in history. So,
yes, I'll always remember it as the show in which Andre the Giant cleanly pinned Hulk Hogan to win the championship fairly.
Well, you know, given your skewed views of all things professional wrestling, that's not surprising coming from you.
I will say, I hope you use this valuable promotional opportunity to promote the Place to Be Nation Pop family.
I did. I not only promoted our podcast, of course, I also promoted specifically Comic Book Theater, Geek and Sassy, and the Marvel Age podcast.
Oh, you're working hard to pop me tonight, Nick. You're working hard. Yes, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Nick, because we do want to give a shout-out to all of our friends at Place to Be Nation Pop. Once you're finished with us and these two old chunks of coal – you can listen to some of the fine folks that have taken what we started and launched it to new heights. People like Jenny and Miranda at Geek and Sassy. People like Russell Sellers over at the Sellers Podcast. People like Todd Weber and Tim Capel at Conversation Cops. People like Tim and Jenny on the newest sensation, Talking Pop. Not really the newest sensation, though, because there's a brand new sensation that you mentioned earlier, the Marvel Age podcast, talking about the early days of Marvel Comics. We've also got the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular. We've also got the recently wrapped up Go Home in a Box in the archives. We've got a theoretical cornucopia of podcasts right here at Place to Be Nation Pop, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for listening. I thank you for being a friend of mine and a friend of the shows. And we will see you, never, in fact, but we will talk to you through this podcast, same time, same place, give or take a day or two, next week. Adios, amigo, amigas.
Bye.
I'm traveling fanboys.